It's that time again, Mystic Pete Chronicles on Sunday nights, 7 p.m., getting ready for a sunset here at the Loyola Marymount University campus. Just a beautiful summer day. Despite what's going on in the world, we're bringing you beautiful music. Thank you, Ernesto. Another great show. And I have a really interesting interview I'm going to play in a minute with Hannah Cleo. Did I say that I am Mystic Pete? You can reach me at mysticpete.com and Mystic Pete on social media. Okay, here's the interview with Hannah Cleo. Explains all about who she is. A wonderful person I met on the internet. Here we go. It is August 8th, 2025. Mystic Pete here with Hannah Cleo, H-A-N-A-C-L-I-O. Actually, Hannah Cleo is in Canada, but a very articulate, intelligent woman I found on social media, proving my theory that intelligent life does exist on the internet, despite evidence to the contrary. Hi, Hannah Cleo.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Why don't I let you introduce yourself and tell a little about your projects?
I think I started making videos 2 months ago. Overall, I took a break in the middle. Actually, I started with, I just wanted to talk about racism in general, but then it slowly progressed into more political and more philosophical kind of direction. And I'm a little surprised by that, but that's, you know, here, that's what I'm doing now. And for me, it's not just about trying to get into this online political discussion sphere and all that stuff. I mean, for me, at the same time, making videos is also a form of self-expression. I think any type of self-expression you put out there, right, you're going to have to go through some kind of mental turmoil. You know, you have to go through some kind of psychological change. And for me, that's what I want to do, because I want to go through this challenge. And maybe overcome things like self-doubts, you know, more vocal about my ideas, my opinions, things like this. So for me, I encourage other people who, if you have the time and, you know, means to do something like this, I think it could be very beneficial to people psychologically to record your ideas. You don't have to put it online, right? But if you, you know, it's like a video diary of your thoughts. And just put it, you can put it out there or you can keep it to yourself, but it's a process of self-acceptance as well. So apart from talking about politics, right? So personally, it's also more about that for me.
Just to get right into it, I think some people will find your posts radical, provocative, even incendiary. But I actually find your post to be courageous, very direct. You're a truth teller. And honestly, what you're saying is, like, to an informed, intelligent person, it's obvious. So I really appreciate you just saying the truth, but sometimes saying really direct, obvious truth these days seems to be provocative and controversial. We're in some weird times. So how did you get to this point? What is your background?
I study science in universities. So it's not like I, you know, I was studying politics or sociology, that kind of subject. But because I grew up in such a complicated environment, that there was no safety for me. So I developed this habit of observing people and activities and things they do, patterns, things like that. So I think that has allowed me to form a particular way of thinking. So I would read books. I would think about people's behavior, myself, right, self-reflection and all that stuff. And gradually, I guess I just developed a very intense curiosity about how society works, how group works, right? How we work collectively. I mean, there's still so much for me to learn. I mean, I what I know is very surface level, but it's more about develop independent thinking, that you think for yourself, and just these kind of things, just think in general, thinking, reading, observing. That's it. Yeah, that's why I started doing all of this. I mean, I've been thinking about all this stuff like forever, basically. So now I get to talk about them. Perhaps, I don't know, build a career out of this. I see people doing this, and I'm very encouraged by what they're doing, you know?
There's clearly a great deal of intelligence behind your words. And as I say, it is eloquent. It's so well spoken and get right to the heart of issues. So why don't we just dive in to the meat of this and get your opinions. Let's talk about the polarized situation we face and how it came to be. It's national, it's worldwide. We're in a real tipping point right now.
It is a very complex issue. And I think nowadays it is very important to point out the complexity of things, because the way we consume information has become, more and more simplistic. And that's problematic for me, at least, right? And simplify things and point fingers and establish what's wrong and right in a very rough manner. And, for this polarized situation, right, I feel like in general, I mean, right now, at least in US, right, political parties have become more ideologically homogeneous now. So there used to be like liberal Republicans and conservative Democrats back then, but over time they have migrated to the party that is more aligned with their ideologies. And I think for the left, right, there is still a very strong distinction between far left and left. I think the majority, at least I think the majority, right, at least I hope, much more prefer social democracy over far left ideologies. But the problem for me right now, it's for people on the right side, I feel there's this decreasing a distinction between far right and right, right? It's very hard to differentiate them now. And I feel like center doesn't exist anymore, right? Which is why we don't have this bipartisanship in, the decline of that. So the right is, for me, my eyes are harboring this very extreme ideas, right? Ideas of xenophobic ideas, fascist views, I think overall left still has better morals and better policies, right? But realistically speaking, the problem is in real life, you can't expect someone to be 100% good or aligned with your ideals, right? So that's the problem facing on the left right now, that is there seems to be like no good candidate or no one is ideal enough to lead the party or to lead people, right? To be the thought leader or whatever. But I feel it's just so hard to establish a common ground with the other side now, right? This surge of like all the stuff I said before, the extreme views, right? All the stuff. So, and not to mention, there's this very intense degree of anti-intellectualism. I'm not saying that it's only a problem from one side. We probably always have this tendency toward anti-intellectualism collectively, right? But now with this media fragmentation, right? There's so many outlets, so many information now, right? So many just different forms of information coming from all direction, right? So people can now curate their news consumption to align with their existing beliefs now, creating this echo chamber and just reinforce their existing beliefs without challenges. I used to think maybe because of lack of exposure of ideas from the other side, but now I started to think that it's more like they refuse the opposing viewpoints. I mean, some people also like to point finger at identity politics, right? Think that started some type of division. But for me, identity politics is just some kind of natural progression, right? If you are a country, you're not at war. You're not starving, right? You're somewhat peaceful. Life is manageable day to day. you will get to a point that you will start questioning identity. It doesn't matter if it's personal identity or relate to race, gender, gender equality, you know, social justice. I mean, we would have always reached this point anyways. And you, of course, you're going to have problems emerging from going through this process. And we just have to learn from mistakes, right? And tweak things along the way and move forward. You know, I understand the problem coming from the left, right? This zero-sum mentality where, you know, leads to cancel culture and all that. But just because it's problematic doesn't mean we have to go back to 1950s now talking about whether women should vote or not. I mean, that's like many steps backward just because there's cancel culture. So I find that very problematic. And I find it very hard to find a common ground with this.
Yes, very interesting. If I may add my opinion about this, the real underlying situation that's leading to all this polarity is fear born of change. I mean, in the last few decades, change, the rate of change is speeding up. So change is accelerating. This year, there's more change than last year. And everything's changing. Religion, politics, economy, identity, sexuality. And on top of that, social media is kind of like flattening everything. It's flattening our experience to a very narrow band. So underneath it all, we're all kind of confused and we're all kind of scared and we don't know what's happening. And when you're in that situation, I think people naturally just run to whatever pillar is around that feels like the most stable. If that pillar, you know, the big man pounding his chest, well, that feels the safest. You know, if it's the other way, then you're running to some idea of liberation. This kind of breeds a lot of absolutism and purity culture. You were talking about how people, you know, cancel culture, how people are getting just intolerant of the other side because there's more than just looking to a political ideology. There's safety. We need to feel like we are protected.
But for me, if I observe left and right, I think there's a lot of ideas from the left is more focusing on other people. If you talk about LGBTQ rights, you're going to talk about immigrants are equal, you know, all that stuff. There's just a lot of ideas of focusing on other people. But now I'm seeing a lot of ideas from the right. It's more, for me, it's more self-serving. It's more about, what about me? What about my privilege? What about my culture? You know, who's going to preserve that with all this multiculturalism going on? And I feel it is for people who are definitely have more this fear-driven mentality that what about me? Where is my place? What is my identity? Where do I fit in all of this, right? Is this supposed to be my country? But for me, it's irrational. I think a fear-driven type of a worldview is a terrible worldview. I understand there's a lot of things to be afraid in this world, but when it comes to ideas and, you know, acceptance and politics, right, thinking in general, we have to come out of that fear. We have to understand that that's not the way to go. I mean, I can see people who come to my video attack me the way they attack me, the stuff they said. It's mostly out of fear that I can sense that. In time of crisis, right, I still think kindness is the way to go, right? We all afraid. I'm afraid too. We all have something to lose, right? No one is like nothing to lose. So if you have something to lose, you will be afraid of something, right? We were all afraid as a child, as you know, and grow up with this adult pressure, peer pressure, right? And be the provider, have to succeed. We all have, we share this fear, right? It's not like it's unique to certain individuals, right? But that doesn't mean we can, you know, just submit to these types of ideas now just because we are afraid, right?
And well, what kind of attacks do you get? What are people saying?
Personal, I expect that, right? If you put yourself online, I mean, some people just put themselves online eating some fruit or whatever, they still get attacked. So that's just, you expect that, right? Some people are just sitting there doing nothing, they still get attacked. So I expect to be attacked, so that's fine, that's normal. But these types of attacks, they're very politically driven, and they have these very absurd assumptions about what I'm trying to do. And I can sense anxiety behind that, right? These assumptions made based on some type of anxious feeling. Like, what is she doing? She's not even from my country. Why is she talking about this? It's absurd, but not absurd at the same time, you know. For me, making these videos is almost like a social experiment. I read every comment. I reply to every comment. I interact. I reply to private messages because I am also trying to understand how others work and how they receive what I'm doing and how do I feel about things.
I hear from the outspoken female commentators that they not only get attacked on the content, they get attacked as a woman too. So like there's a double heat on you.
Yeah, they do. A lot of misogynistic comments, right? I still think our society is deeply sexist and misogynistic. And so I feel very good about that, putting content out there, basically challenging these ideas, because I'm standing there talking confidently about what I think, right? It's a challenge to this type of worldview, especially I look foreign. So I think any challenge toward this very rigid type of thinking is a good thing to do. So that's another thing motivate me, actually, to keep doing this. Yeah, because I want to challenge that. Because I feel, because think about it, you can always move on from my videos, right? Why are you so triggered? You don't have to listen to this. You don't have to comment. But you come back over and over. It means something about what I said or being who I am still triggers something inside of you that you have to deal with it. There's some kind of weight, right? So which means they have to come back over and over, argue, reemphasize what they believe and all that. It means they feel challenged. And that's what I want to do. I sort of want to challenge, you know.
I appreciate your experiment here. It's almost like this curiosity led you into speaking your truth. And as I said earlier, it comes off to me as courageous. And to somebody else, maybe radical and upsetting. But again, to me, it's kind of like she's just stating the obvious. But to some people, it's really incendiary. That's the situation. Well, let's go back to kind of the conversation we were having. And I'd like to point out that the right wing is really the culture that has existed for millennia. In other words, tribe is right. The big man is right. We're right. Our way or the highway. It's like more of the law of the jungle. Might makes right. That's really how things were organized for thousands of years when there were kingdoms like the big king. It's his way, or you're going to jail, or you're going to be shot, or you're going to be killed. But so this idea, I guess, starting in the Enlightenment, that individuals have rights, and every man, or even to be more radical, every human is created equally, right? This is like a radical new idea, and that's the left wing. So the people kind of reverting back to that older style, the right wing, the conservative values, that's the way it always was. So I'm wondering, what is my question? My question is how these two things can get along. It's like the old style of being safe and secure and hunkering down and mistrusting the stranger. It's just so natural to us. You know, the people across the street from me, have you seen how awful they are? You know, this kind of thing. Those people over there, they're terrible. Mistrust, it keeps us safe. So there's an intelligence of it. It's just not like being a bad, it's being safe. So how does this resolve with us wanting to include everybody and be nice and liberal society and everybody gets to vote? Like, it seems so polarized, but there's got to be a way for them to get along. Otherwise, we're dead. We're all extinct.
Yeah, and I think there are a lot of ideas are should be welcomed in this society, but there are other types of ideas should be condemned. I don't care how popular they are with certain groups of people. It's still a question of morality, right? If you want to look at which ideas are more moral, if we want to thrive as a civilization, we do have to get rid of garbage ideas. And I know right now we're facing this problem that looks like a lot of people embracing some of the aspects of those ideas. It has a lot to do with how information works now, right? How disinformation works. I mean, we always had a problem dissecting information, but now it's even more prominent than ever before, right? With this exponential growth of technology, right? Now you have AI and all that. So everything is a I think it's getting more and more challenging to implement good ideas, right? Because of this, I don't really believe in include everyone type of. I don't think it's possible. I mean, how do I include someone who's just against a foreign face or just want to embrace xenophobic views or racist views, right? Or leave these psychopathic type of comments online about certain race. I will not embrace these. I will not include you. Why do I have to include these bad ideas, right? That's why I appreciate people who go challenge these ideas. It's a very complicated issue, and I still think it's going to take a lot to unify people. And during the process, there will be sacrifice, right? It's not going to be a pleasant process. And right now, I see a lot of people on the left are pointing out these terrible, problematic ideas from the right, and I think we should never accept these viewpoints. And I think certain way of thinking, right? They should just be. I don't expect people to change these views, but what I would like is if this is promoting hatred, it's promoting division, right? I would prefer that these things a bit more silenced and put in the corner. I don't expect them to change. They will always be there. I think even when we had to like a highly developed society, you see flying car outside the window, I suspect like fascism will still stay. That it will stay in some kind of form, ways, some kind of thinking, that because it has a root in the way that we work psychologically. So for me, it's like not including these bad ideas and not tolerate them. It's more about that for me. You know, it's fight against it. I don't want to include you in the good part of the society. You don't deserve to be there if you're going to leave. You know, I saw a lot of people leaving these very psychopathic type of comments online under any Indian-related videos, and they used to piss me off. Because I can see where that's going to lead to, and it led to something like that already, and there just should be we should not tolerate that. That's it. And also, perhaps shame people who trying to emphasize more use their power, position power, you know, podcasters and all that people, famous people, they are spreading more disinformation for clicks and popularity and all that, right? And that should also be condemned. So I don't know if you can have a society you can include everyone, right? I mean, how should we include someone like Hitler? No. So I'm less optimistic about that.
Perhaps it's just that the people in charge are not the hateful people. Maybe that's a solution. But just to summarize what I think you said, in the choice between some kind of traditional idea of society, might makes right, my way or the highway, and the approach of being moral, you come down on the side of being moral. That's the future. That's the answer. I am talking with Hannah Clio, H-A-N-A-C-L-I-O, and she has a very compelling material up on Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, X. Just search Hannah Clio, and I think you'll be enchanted. Well, do you see a collapse coming, considering this extreme polarization? By the way, what I didn't include that third factor that you mentioned, and that's just parasitic people trying to make money and taking advantage of a very difficult situation where everybody's confused, the podcasters and the influencers who are just trying to figure out how they can profit off of this mess. They're kind of vultures. So that's another force making everything much more difficult. But go ahead, the future, is it a collapse inevitable? Is that the way things resolve? Or is there some more graceful way out of this?
Personally, I don't see a collapse coming. I also feel that today in today's society, we are just too privileged to even go to that kind of extreme measure of things, right? I feel like most people complain a lot about the current situation, but at the same time, we are much more comfortable than, I would say, like 50s, not even that long time ago, right? We want to hold on to our privilege as much as we can. And for that, I think we're willing to cooperate in the end, right? It's just, but I remember something you said in the messages. You said sometimes things get worse before they get better, and I agree. Because, for example, if right now, like, let's say multiculturalism is somewhat suppressed, is like this evil concept, right? This ruining society or whatever. But things like this, usually when they get suppressed, ideas like this, when they usually get suppressed, after a while, they come back tenfold. Like they, because it's inevitable, right? Just because of this period of suppression of things like this, ideas are like this, they make a great comeback. So my suspicion is after this chaotic period, we're gonna probably head to a society that is more gonna embrace multiculturalism even more, right? Because look at it now. I mean, everyone's watching Squid Game, right? The TV show. Everyone's listening to K-pop. That's not gonna change. We're not gonna go backward because this is too comfortable. It's too entertaining. It's too this modern life is too comfortable, right? You go online. You watch anime. You do all this. We don't want to give up this privilege. So. I think there will be chaos and a lot of mistakes, a lot of sacrifice. But in the end, I would say I'm optimistically cautious about future. And I still think things can work out just fine, right? And because I don't have this I'm not against capitalism. So I'm not against the capitalist society. I don't think we need a fundamental change of system, right? I think it can work. It just needs to have small reforms, you know, in many different ways. It's going to be challenging, but it's still the best system we have, right? And we always have to compete, and competing is miserable. And we still live in a relatively free society, and a lot of benefit from liberal values, the progressiveness that we achieved so far. And I don't think people who stand for these values, they're gonna easily let these things go. They will resist, and they will. I see a lot of people on the left. They're very strong on their stance, and they're quite fearless. And I suspect there are a lot of people who are this way. They're just more silent about it, right? Not like me making videos and stuff. But I feel that with this push of far right stuff, there's going to be even harder pushback against it, right? Look at Canada, right? Last election, right? Because of what's going on with America, liberal, they were losing voters' confidence, right? But then they made a very great comeback with Carney because of people realizing that conservative values, a lot of them have, you know, like, they're not very great ideas. They're not that beneficial. I think, so I still think it will work out, but it needs it needs a lot of work. It needs a lot of it's going to be challenging, but I still think we will be fine.
I'm speaking with Hannah Clio, HANACLIO, who is in Canada, and through the miracle of technology, you are in studio right now. And what you were saying a little while ago, actually, it sounds like a dialectic. In other words, something emerges and there's a reaction to it. And then eventually there's a synthesis, or it all comes together, this pendulum swinging. And you think that the emergence of, like, such right-wing ideas and, you know, almost fascism precipitates the emergence of something else. People, like, start questioning and going, well, what do we really want? Let's stop just numbing ourselves, and because we have to know, we have to engage to figure out what is an intelligent way to move into the future. And you don't think a collapse is going to happen. You think the synthesis is that, you think things are going to work themselves out. And I'm thrilled that that's your vision. I'm not so sure. I almost feel like the best that could happen is that we're all looking over the precipice. We're like on the edge of the abyss, and we all decide not to go over, but like, we're going to need like 1 foot over the edge of the cliff first for that to happen. But in any case, getting to a much more personal question then, how do we personally navigate this crisis? How do we stay sane and comfortable and not in a constant state of panic, considering all the radical changes? Like, things are kind of melting down on all levels.
People used to tell me you have to get off social media and decompress. I didn't really believe in that back then. Right? But now I'm starting to feel maybe there is a lot of truth to that. You just have to get off this vicious negative cycle of doom scrolling, you know, information, just negative news everywhere. You know, to stay calm and stay composed would need a lot of psychological work. But at the same time, I feel stay silent is not good for the mind either. That if you don't actively go support your point of view and all that, it has some type of psychological harm to you too. Like if you don't stand up to things, right? If you like people used to say, it's better to minimize things. But I think now we're getting to the stage that minimizing things, I don't think it will help us psychologically, right? It's better to acknowledge how terrible things really are now and face it. And not to, I mean, my videos, if you go on my channel, you probably feel, okay, this is all just how terrible human beings are in general, how much we love conflicts, how dangerous everything is. You know, it's like, it's almost like a fear mongering kind of page. Nothing is positive, nothing is good. But I feel there is some, I think there's some relief to things when you acknowledge how terrible things are. Individually, personally, to stay calm, deal with life, I think we just have to deal with everything the way we have always dealt with things, right? Everyone has personal struggles in life. Everyone, I feel most people have hard lives, right? Even if you don't have a lot of terrible experiences, you will still have to face mortality, death of loved ones and your own death. So in the end, you still have like something that's difficult to face. So this process of facing difficult things has always been there, right? It's not like it's unique to the situation now, right? But even back then, if the political climate was somewhat stable, there were other things, right? Other things that can cause anxiety and all that. So basically, for me, it's more about build resilience in the mind, right? Like you would have to build resilience for all the terrible stuff in your life. You have to build resilience for what's going on politically. I personally learned a lot of things from looking at other people who make content, right? I a lot of them face a lot of controversy, a lot of backlash or whatever, and I see the way they are. They're very firm, very sure about who they are. They stay their ground, stand their ground. They confidently, they're very assertive. They're sure about who they are, what they stand for, and I think to have resilience for things, right? You have to know who you are. You have to be sure who you are. So things gonna get terrible. It's gonna get better. Whatever it is, right? It's just life. We just have to be resilient. And sometimes I have this sudden realization just how cruel some things are in this world, right? And I still have to find a way to get out of that and build resilience and be resilient.
Sounds like you're saying three things. One, manage social media so you don't get overwhelmed with this constant stream of upsetting information. But two, engaging when appropriate. In other words, it feels good to be informed. It's empowering. And, you know, if the waves of chaos, well, now it's in that other city. Okay, that's not my problem, right? But now it's in your city. And now the waves of chaos are down your block. Eventually, the waves of chaos are going to be slamming against your front door. So the sooner and more actively you participate in change and what's happening, the more you're going to be able to deal with it and more options you're going to have than waiting till the last minute. So that's, I think, number two you're saying. But it's also about resilience and developing the stamina to negotiate these difficult times. So that's almost like an inner process. You know, I'm Mystic Pete, I'm in all this inner spiritual stuff. So that's like something we have to find power on the inside too. It's good. What do you see like the evolved male look like, or the evolved female I mean, this even gets into the issue of dating and mating. And there's so much about this on social media. And I think it's a very difficult time to date and mate. And I think it's on people's minds a lot. And certainly the political and, again, the chaos affects us personally. And we want to have romance in our life and somebody we trust and love. I mean, when you come down to it, it's one of the main things about life, having people you love and intimacy and play and this kind of deep connection. So anyway, another big question, but it's really bringing it to the personal. What are your thoughts about all this?
I did listen to a lot of conversations about all of this. I my personal feeling is, I feel with the progressive liberal values, right, in place and all that, I feel there is a lot of progress in terms of like identity as a female, right? There's a lot of progress, right? We understand now we don't have to stick to the traditional conservative side of things, right? We can be, you know, we can be leaders. We can not have children. We can be more free in the society, right? And but I do feel the role of male in society has not changed much. They're still stuck with the same narrative as just the provider.
Yeah,
that's
I'm
it.
One of them.
But
no, go ahead.
And I feel for me, I mean, I can condemn incel culture and all that, but at the same time, I do feel there's a bit of a lack of acknowledgement that how men are generally just stuck with this very traditional role, and you know, be the provider, the alpha male. You have to be capable. Hard for them to be vulnerable, and I feel like as if just the conversation about who men are just stuck in the past. It hasn't progressed much, because there's a lot of talk about gay people, trans people, women. But what about men? You know, why are they still stuck with this traditional roles, that I gotta be the provider, I have to be capable of in certain ways and all that. I find that problematic, and I do feel that do isolate young people, young men. You can argue that, well, it's other men made it difficult for all the men, right? Because they dictate things more in the society, but. But that does not reduce the pressure, right? I think society puts too much pressure on men being the capable provider and all these very rigid roles, and it's a problem. And I can imagine being a 16 years old boy, right, looking at all the things in society and thinking about, I have to grow up to be this very successful figure so that I can find someone and all that. That's a lot of pressure, and that's not healthy. And as for dating, I think this has a lot to do with this kind of mindset, right? Women, we can talk about, oh, we're different now. We progress, right? We're complicated. We're just as complicated as men. We're just as capable. But when it comes to dating, right, men being a provider will still be the first, most important thing. I mean, I just feel it's a lot of pressure putting on men. So I think it's better that for society to acknowledge that there's too much pressure on men. And as for dating, and I reject all the ideas of people sitting there saying women want this, men want that. For me, it's like we're individuals now. It doesn't work like that, right? A lot of these data you give me is, what, 72% women happier if they this and that. It's not reliable data, right? It's bull. It doesn't work like that, right? But different people want different things. So sitting there talk about this is a complete gibberish. I certainly don't fall into whatever the category they're trying to say. I feel I'm always one the opposite of what they're saying. So I think it's a group mentality, which I don't like. Women like this, men like that. Everybody is different. So for me, it's just don't listen to this stuff. It's garbage. But for me, it's like, if you want to find the other half or whatever, right? I think the most important thing is first, you have to know who you are as a person. If you're not, if you're confused about who you are, right? You're gonna have a hard time finding something genuine. So it's going back to the generic stuff, like work on yourself first, right? But at the same time, it doesn't mean that just because you're not perfect, you have to work on yourself, you should just give all this up and be alone. I don't agree with that either. So, and I personally observe a lot of people this date interracially, like they date people outside their race, right? I like that. I feel that's more open-minded, right? If you can get past all the cultural differences, all the baggage, it's probably more likely, maybe, right, that you find true love in that way. So, yeah, that's just what I think. I think there's a lot of gender problems when it comes to dating, and a lot of self-reflection needed.
Well, coming back to that idea of like the personal work we have to do, I mean, there's a lot in society, but we also have to deal with ourselves and our insecurities. Solving politics is not going to necessarily solve us individually. Both need to be addressed. And I really like what you're saying about we're individuals. Yes, there's all these studies and these big proclamations and all men are like this and women are, but I guess you're the first person I heard say it, but it's what I've been feeling. Like, we're individuals, we're different. And certainly there's these different camps in the male community and the female community, but we have an opportunity to be much more distinctive now and create the rules, expectations that we want to. But the two forces we're wrestling with is being safe and being protected and being vulnerable. And like being vulnerable in this time, it's difficult because it is back to the chaotic change factor. I think women are actually further ahead than men in terms of self-identity because they had to come out of like this period of compression, oppression, and find more about who they are. And men didn't. Men, it's just a more question about letting go of control and power, which is hard to do. But what particularly confuses men, not to be contradictory, but this is real. It's like, we hear from women that, you know, you want the protector, the strong guy, the big, you know, the provider. Why should I even be with you if you're not going to pay for my dinner? So this is really confusing, man. We don't know what it is. Do you want the nice, soft, vulnerable guy? Or do you want the guy, the big gorilla beating his chest? So I'm not saying we can solve this, but this is part of the heart of the confusion. And then, like you said, incel, the incel guys just kind of throw up their hands, or they just, there's no interest in them at all. And so they bunker down into this kind of mean, hostile, awful situation.
Yeah, true. This, I don't know when this started, this whole thing about who should pay on the first dinner, right? This whole thing, and I was listening to it, I was thinking like this is more of an identity issue, right? It's not just about money. It's more about what role I should play as a man, what role I should play as a woman when it comes to dating. It is hard when you're at the stage of getting to know someone, right? But I personally feel, why is that a big deal? I mean, if you meet someone that you kind of get along, you will not care about this. You will not think about this. You will not focus on this. If you are focusing on this, it probably means that you don't really like that person that much. Right? You don't like them enough to get past this. And so, and also this is put people into that group thing again. It's as if we can generalize people just based on this, these options, right? It's a complete nonsense.
I like what you're saying. It comes back to like we're individuals. Why are we defaulting back to these rules and generalizing? Just like, who's the person in front of you and what works for the two of you, right? Wow, Hannah Cleo, that's the future. Right. Well, Hannah Clio, HannaClio, you are present on YouTube and Instagram and X and TikTok with some real incisive commentary and observations and truth telling. Very courageous voice. I really appreciate you taking this time with me. And this show, I specialize in the real brilliant lights of the community, the people who have a lot to say, but who may not be celebrities. They may not be the official pundits. They may not be the authorized experts, but important voices, and you are one of them. So it's been a real pleasure to feature you here on the Mystic Pete Chronicles.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed our conversation. Thank you. Nights like these moon high in the sky, so glad that you are near. Ocean breeze, there's only you and I.
Oh, baby, did L'humanité court trop vite à la recherche d'un monde qu'elle veut sans doute meilleur. Pourtant, notre terre a gardé son rythme. Elle aussi a un cœur. Pourquoi ne pas l'écouter au lieu de l'étouffer? Plutôt que de courir après des leurs, arrêtons-nous un instant et écoutons.
That was music by Zap Mama. That was called Mupepe. And before that, music by Art Bleek and Lola Dillon, Skin to Skin. I hope everybody stays tuned for Pat with Alien Air. Mystic Pete here with the Mystic Pete Chronicles. You can reach me at mysticpete.com and Mystic Pete on social media. Big thanks to Hannah Cleo for her brilliant interview. And I'll be back next week with the very finest of talk radio. Mystic Pete out.